Hello and welcome to the Managing Madrid podcast. This is Gabe Lesra. After a break week for me when I was traveling, and I'm back to bring all the negativity back to the podcast. I'm joined tonight. Hard to be negative after a 6-0 win, but I'm joined tonight by Kian Sobani and Mike Platania. No Josh this week. How's it going, guys?
It's good. It's good to have some negativity back. Last week it was basically just me and just like saying yes to one another.
My friends coined the term for like fight agreeing. It's like agreeing vigorously with each other, which is basically what you're like having a debate when you're basically both on the same side. I feel like we do that pretty well here.
It was great. It was like a debate between me, Mike, and then everyone else who wasn't there. So we had a chance to just talk about how much we love Bale and, you know, among other things.
Well, I mean, we have a great game to discuss today. A game where I think that a pessimistic person could say that Madrid got a bit lucky, but I actually think that even despite what I feel like were some lucky bounces for Madrid, Madrid actually really did deserve all the goals that they had. 6-0 against Espanyol in the Bernabeu. Zidane's team has improved to 3-0-1 and 3-0 at home, scoring at least 5 goals in each game so far at home. It's been a delight to watch, and today was really no different. Really reminded us, I thought for me at least, of the previous game at home where Madrid had this unbelievably strong first half and then kind of took the foot off the pedal a little bit, then kind of springing into life towards the end with a couple of lucky, well, one particularly brilliant goal and then a bit of a lucky one with the own goal. Anything, you know, like initial takeaways from this match? Cristiano Ronaldo getting the hat trick, I think, is good to see him coming up. As Lucas noted, though, guys, Cristiano Ronaldo does tend to score against Espanyol. And this season in particular, he has scored a tremendous percentage of his goals against Espanyol. Anything to take away from that, or is that just kind of fluky?
Can we talk about how badly Lucas got roasted after he tweeted that? I didn't understand the hate. I really don't.
That sort of thing is kind of reminiscent of a lot of Ronaldo detractors. Like, it reminds me of the criticism that, like, Ronaldo detractors say, like, they always point to the amount of penalties he scores and stuff like that, which, of course, wasn't Lucas's intent, but, you know, that's the type of criticism, and people always get really defensive.
He didn't even post an opinion with it. Like, yeah. He didn't say Ronaldo sucks it was just a fact tweeted. That's all it was.
I don't get the hate. I understand, like, my basic feeling is that if you have a big enough audience, you're going to have some percentage of those people are going to be kind of crazy, and some percentage of those crazy people are going to decide that you really need to know what their opinions are about every subject that you're talking about. And I think Lucas, who has now achieved a rather larger audience, is getting that.
No, yeah. Shout out to Lucas. He makes it all happen. Like, everybody who tweeted mean things him today can just piss off. He didn't deserve that at all, but
I think that's the whole point. You're not gonna
we stand with Lucas.
You're not gonna make it in this industry without getting some crazy people pissed off at you for something you didn't mean. And that being said, of course, any rational person would look at that and just be like, just tweeting a statistic doesn't, like, there's no judgment that comes with it. It's a fact, right?
Yeah.
So whatever.
I actually had to block my very first person on Twitter today. For defending Lucas. It was really liberating. It felt really good just to press that block button. I won't lie. I could get used to it. But since we're talking about the game, that we should be talking about the game, I guess.
We're going
off the rails here. But it's funny, isn't it? Like, it seems like these Zidane home games, like, they're basically, it's like watching the same game 3 times. And the first half, they just go on a tear, and that's what I guess I really like and admire about Real Madrid so far under Zidane, is that they come out of the gates just ready to go, and that really sets the tone for the rest of the game. You know, they haven't started slow, they're energetic, and grabbing the early goal gets the Bernabeu into it. It gets them gets their momentum going, and it gets the other team just kind of derailed. Like, it throws their game plan off, because once you go down one or two goals early on, you kind of have to change your tactics, and that really throws everything off. You have to push up a bit. So kudos to Zidane for that. I really liked Isco in this game again. I think he had another great game, and he played really well with Isco. Or he didn't play well with himself. I meant James. Yeah, he played really well with James, and it'll be really interesting to see what happens when Bale comes back.
Well, I think that I agree with that, and I think it's important to note that at this point, I think these last couple of games have shown that Isco and James really can coexist, and it's kind of. I mean, one of the things that I was really impressed with Isco today was by how well he adapted to this role of tracking back and playing as a real midfielder, right? Like as almost that Di Maria intensity of being able to run up and down the pitch. I couldn't tell you how many times in this game you saw Isco come back and really grab possession of the ball after losing it or someone else losing it in attack, and he runs all the way back with a lot of intensity and wins the ball back for Madrid. It was a huge help for them, I thought. And even though Isco didn't get on the score sheet, he provided so much intensity and help for Madrid that I got to tell you, it's hard for me to imagine taking him off the side. Even last year, it seemed like he was not a necessary player the way that, you know, the intensity that he's brought to the squad has just been, I thought, incredible. So I think that it shows that he can play in that midfield role, and he's finally really bringing the intensity that role needs. So,
I think today was kind of like a quintessential Isco game in that, you know, he controlled the ball really well. He opened up lanes. He was good on and off the ball. It was really nice to see. I feel like it had been a while since we had really seen him settle in. And as we were stating a while ago, Ronaldo does tend to just eviscerate Espanyol. But here are some stats I saw before the game, and it's like a bigger issue. It's not just Ronaldo. Like, Espanyol are the team that Madrid have defeated the most in La Liga history, with 97 times now. And they scored the most goals against them. It's up to 365 now. They were missing like at least four or five starters, I think. And they were one win in their last eight, I think. Or I don't even know. They had lost seven games in a row. This team was really in poor form. So it was nice that it was like a complete drubbing. Like, this team, I mean, I don't really have a strong opinion about Espanyol. Like, I don't hate them. I don't have like an affinity to them, but just given the state of their team and given the way Real Madrid typically perform against them, it was kind of like the status quo. I don't know what it is about this team that they just destroy.
Fuel. All of that is fuel for all these Barcelona conspiracy theorists who say Espanyol basically bend over for us. And there was one dude on Twitter, he said that we should be in, or Espanyol should be investigated for taking money from us to lose all these games.
Well, it's important to remember also that Espanyol were actually not playing with their full-strength squad because of Real Madrid's loanees.
Right.
Right. That so Asensio, true. Marco Asensio is arguably the best player on Espanyol, and Real Madrid has, in the loan contract, has prevented, which is a standard provision in all loan contracts. I mean, I don't really understand. The Spanish press is taking to calling the contract clause the coward clause, but I think it's nonsense. Of course, if you're loaning a player to a team, you don't want that player playing against you. I think it seems, obvious. So,
especially given the history of Real Madrid has of their former players or loan players scoring against them, and like if you go back to Morata wasn't on loan, but Morata and then Morientes with Monaco. Both brutal. Knocked us out of the Champions League.
Right.
Given that history, you absolutely, I don't mind that in the clause at all.
So, and that's right. I mean, that's an important part of the contract. It's an important part to remember that this is basically an Espanyol squad with maybe not an entire arm, but maybe, maybe a couple of, maybe an entire hand tied up in a ball. Like, you can't. They couldn't do what they would necessarily normally try to do.
Right.
That being said, also, though, it's Espanyol fouled Madrid 19 times, which is the same number of times they fouled Barcelona in that famously combative game that the Barcelona fans, you know, and Barcelona generally absolutely whined and wept about in the Copa del Rey. So,
yeah,
you know, it was still a physical game. Espanyol's a physical team, and they're going to come out to play. It's not, I don't think anyone is going to pretend otherwise.
100%. And those weren't just like regular fouls or tactical fouls. They were aggressive. There was actually a few challenges there where I was worried that if we would even walk away from this game without one or two people going down. I was really worried about that because they were pretty rash challenges all around.
I agree, and I want to mention that I thought Zidane's substitutions were really strong in that regard. He's taking out the players, and I know that there was a lot of, like, I don't understand why you take out Modric at this point. But of course you take out Modric. First of all, he's a rather injury-prone player. He's also one of the players who runs a lot in midfield. Like, if you actually, like, if you look at the statistics for how much Modric and some of these other players run, he's definitely towards the top end of that. And, you know, he's an older player, which means he's a little bit more injury prone and can't do as much running. I am perfectly happy with him coming out, especially with Madrid up by four. Like, this is a great substitution.
Yeah.
And it made a ton of sense to me. And then it made a lot of sense to take out Kroos also, who was the recipient of a number of very hard challenges. Like, get these guys out of the game. They're very important for Madrid. And then Benzema also, who's also can be an injury risk. Like, this is, I thought it was a very good series of moves for Zidane, simply in the let's protect my important players variant of coaching, right?
All right, real quick before we get too far away from the subject, Marco Asensio, low key tied for sixth most assists in La Liga this year. Which,
yeah, I saw that. It was pretty crazy. It's
pretty impressive. Anyway, I completely 1,000,000% agree with you, Gabe, that, like, Kroos and Modric were both off before, like, what, the 68th minute mark, I think? Like,
yeah.
Pretty early on. Pretty awesome. Especially considering, like everything you just said, Kroos gets knocked a lot. Modric is not exactly a paragon of good health. And Modric's injury last year essentially, I mean, like, derailed the entire season. So, yeah, brilliant substitutions by Zidane, I think.
I think any criticism with the substitutions didn't necessarily come with who he was taking off, but that maybe instead of, you know, bringing on Jesse for Modric, it should have been Kovacic or Casemiro, who eventually came on. But I don't really have an opinion either way. I was fine with the substitutions, but any complaints that I saw was that why Jesse and why not Kovacic for Modric?
It's an interesting question. It wasn't a like for like. I think that he wanted to. Here's my vision. My belief was that I think he wanted to test out the what would happen if we were to drop Hamas back a little bit into the midfield to see if we could roll with a rather light midfield of the three guys that were out there at that point. Right. It was Isco, Hamas, and Kroos.
Right.
And that's a pretty light midfield. Right. And so dropping those three back, I think, especially against a team with four goals on them, you know, there's not a lot of risk because it's not a defensive team. And let's see if we can do it. I'm not sure I buy it. So I like the idea. I'm not sure I buy it personally. I think it made Isco run more, and it just showed us how committed he really was to this. But I just I think that my guess is that's why he made that call.
Yeah, I agree. I kind of saw it the same way, where you got Hamas dropping a bit deeper and just seeing how it works, because I think Zidane also sees Hamas as a bit of a deeper player.
Yeah.
Like where Isco would normally play. So this was just a chance for just a shuffle, because he really likes Jesse. We all know that he would like Jesse to be basically the 12th guy, you know, coming in every game. So this was a way, and it was easily shufflable.
Right.
So, yeah. And it was 4-4 nothing, like you said. There was no risk there.
Right.
I was going to say, I think he was kind of experimenting. It was the first time that Casemiro's played since 2016. So, it might just be like a kind of let's get him some minutes type of deal.
I agree. Yep. I think Casemiro has a big role to play, and it may just be a gut feeling, but he is a kind of a unique player on the squad and what he brings to the pitch. And I also think it's an interesting, like, the midfield of James, Isco, Casemiro is actually an interesting midfield if you think about the different types of balance that you're bringing to the pitch. When you're having a real running up and down type with Isco bringing that kind of Di Maria intensity, Casemiro bringing a more physical defensive-like box-to-box type, and then James being more of a traditional 10, it's an interesting mix of players. So I don't see why trying to mix and match with that and experiment at that point of the game is a bad idea. I liked it a lot. The only thing I'm worried about is that I think Kovacic is a very exciting young talent, and so it's important for him to get minutes.
Right.
Now, yeah. maybe Zidane thought we don't really need minutes for him in this type of game. He's actually, a person who needs to be thrown in. Let's say if we need to take Modric out in minute 30 of a game against, Atleti or something, maybe we're going to try a more like-for-like thing there if we feel like the game plan is working well. I don't know. That's I'm reading this stuff.
Yeah, I agree. And just given the way Casemiro plays, he's like kind of that destroyer-type role, which is kind of what you're looking for when you're 4-0 up, although you could probably make an argument you could kind of do whatever the hell you want when you're 4-0 up. But
I thought that's what I mean. I think Zidane kind of was doing whatever the hell he wanted at 4-0, right? Yeah. Explanation I have for the Jesse for Modric sub. I think Zidane actually really values Jesse, given that, he's seen Jesse grow up as a player. I think he values him, right? And so
totally.
Jesse, especially in that year before his injury, brought such an exciting, exciting addition to the squad. I think Zidane sees it as an important thing to try to bring him back into that form, because I think that a lot of people would say that if Jesse doesn't get injured, I mean, Josh and I definitely have had this conversation, but if Jesse doesn't get injured in 2014, I think that Madrid could probably win the treble. I'm not sure. How things would shake out exactly, but it wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, well, I mean, the strategy that Zidane has taken in using Jesse right now, it's working, right? I mean, you could argue that whatever he's doing now, it's working because Jesse looks really good. He looks confident.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really important because
I agree.
We don't have a backup for Benzema. So when the time comes when you need someone to kind of slip in for Benzema, he needs to be ready to go. He needs to be match fit. Needs to be confident. So I think it's really important. I think the way Zidane is handling it is actually really good.
I agree.
Guys, I think we've gone way too long without talking about the absolute clinic that Ronaldo put on today.
Yeah, good point.
He came into the game with like the amongst people who have scored at least 10 goals. I'm reading a stat that I found that I liked a lot. Amongst like scorers in La Liga who have found the net at least 10 times, he was the least efficient. And interesting is that Benzema is the most efficient, but we could talk about him in a minute. So yeah, that was basically the story. It was like Ronaldo this season so far has been productive, but not an efficient player at all. And he put 5 shots, 4 on target, 3 goals. It was nice to see him absolutely skin defenders on that second goal. I feel like it had been a while since we'd seen him really just frankly embarrass defenders, which what he did like twice or three times on that run. So,
yeah.
I mean, really encouraging. Like maybe this is the start of a return to form for him because that was a hell of a game.
Yeah. I think we've gone too long without mentioning that the goal that he scored on Madrid's 4-0 was, I mean, it was vintage Ronaldo in that he, the way that he just dominated Espanyol's defense was a sight to behold. It was, he gets the ball, he runs down, he does a couple, like a very quick, strong, decisive move center. He makes another quick step move towards that left side. And then that he knew exactly what he was doing because it wasn't a lucky thing. He knew exactly that ball was going to be exactly where it was. And he nails it, right? It was a perfect shot with his left boot into the corner. It was, it was picture perfect. It was a brilliant goal. And hopefully it's the sign of, I thought that and his header were the two, plays of the match for him. He was incredible in those, and it was kind of vintage Ronaldo doing everything on the pitch for Madrid.
That second goal must have been his best goal of the season, wasn't it? I can't remember one better than that.
No, I can't either. I mean, I can't remember many goals better than that overall for Madrid.
Yeah.
Like, it's just...
Did that hat trick goal in that he was, like, not, like kind of shaken up. Like, it looked like he, like, hurt his head that he had.
Well, if you actually saw it in, if you saw it in slow-mo, the keeper's leg knocked him in the head on the fall.
I take that back.
It's great, though, because... Yeah, it's against Espanyol, whatever. You kind of let the haters just talk about it. But you need this game was really needed for him to just boost his confidence. Him being able to go past two or three players and then scoring a golazo like that, it's definitely encouraging to see, because there's going to be some tough games coming up. Like three of the next five games are pretty tough on the schedule. I think there's a question about it actually, but. Good to see that he has these games to build his confidence, because we're going to need his confidence in these big games coming up.
Yeah. He's like totally a player that thrives when he's confident. I think that's just like the type of person he is. So, yeah. Nice to see him play well again. Like I said, Benzema is probably, I feel like I've been saying this for like 3 or 4 years now, is like probably the most underrated player in world football. I mean, he's lethal. He's like the literal most efficient player in La Liga.
I agree.
This is something I saw Boz mention on Twitter. Like, he a few years ago he was really poor at headers, and it was like a big criticism of it. And now he is absolutely brilliant. Like, his game is still evolving.
That header went off his shoulder, right? This is the goal today.
Did it?
Oh, if you see the replay, like the second or third replay shows it. He kind of flicks off his head and then goes in through his shoulder. But in real time, it just looked like a perfect header.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, the ball went to the net and he did it perfectly. So I'm not going to worry about it. I'm going to.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
I mean, he just does so many of these crazy things that on some level, you got to assume like this is basically. He means to do it, right? Like, yeah, he hits the ball in the right direction. It goes in. I'm not going to question it with him. He's been so great these last couple of years. And he's Mike, you're totally right, right? He's expanded his game so much. Even a couple of years ago, we were talking about Benzema as, you know, a false, like this facilitating false nine. But he's got to the point where it's not just that, right? He's not just setting up these great, you know, plays for other players. He's scoring plenty. He's right in there with the Pichichi race. It's Cristiano, Benzema, Neymar, and Bale, right? And I guess I don't know how many Suarez has, but I know that that's where we are, right? Those are the people in the Pichichi race. So Benzema's getting his too.
So like, this is something I kind of noticed this game, and maybe it was just because I was like, I saw it early and I was actively looking for it. Amongst the six players, outfield players that aren't defenders, it seems like they're kind of split like down the center of the pitch, so that there's like three on each side, like with Ronaldo, Marcelo, and Benzema, and then Isco, James. And point being, there's like those three players, you know, like the fullback or the midfielder with the two attackers on, you know, essentially one side of the pitch, which, you know, they kind of do triangle passes and overlapping runs and stuff. And like, those are three players that have been together for, I mean, Ronaldo, Marcelo, and Benzema have played insane amount of minutes together over the years. And they really looked in sync. Like, they kind of knew where they were all going. And I don't know if it was a Zidane thing where it gave them that freedom to, you know, make, you know, curious runs and dribble and make those short, quick passes.
Sure.
It seems like they really cracked a lot of stuff open that way.
Yeah, man, I agree with that. I also think it's important to note Carvajal's presence in the offense and defense, right? I thought that it's tough on Danilo, right, to hear that, but it's just Carvajal is back, right? After a year of being in the wilderness a little bit, he's been really back to form, especially under Zidane, who's made him a centerpiece of his 11. And it's interesting to see how much better the team looks with him on that right flank. He is a dynamic player in offense, even better than I think we've seen him previously. And he's still bringing it in defense, in a way that he was classically doing in our in our run to the decima, right? I think that Carvajal is back to the pantheon of great right backs in the world. I'm not sure there's anyone else I'd take. I know that Alaba plays on the left, right? So, I mean, I gotta tell you, he was the only of all these stupid rumors. When I heard that Madrid was interested in getting him from Bayern, I thought that would have been a brilliant buy, as a Marcelo replacement. But it looks like it's not gonna happen. So, guys, are there any more important storylines that we want to bring out of today's game?
I'm trying to go through my notes. James had the most chances created. He played a full 90. He and Modric together looked absolutely fantastic, I think.
Yeah, I thought James was incredible.
And this was something we talked about last week, that people were kind of underwhelmed with his performance last week, but it was his first like serious minutes in a while. And it seems like he's settled in, and we're seeing him do James things, which is fun. Albeit that goal was a wacky deflection, but it was still a pretty powerful shot that was probably going to at least force the keeper to make a save. His assist to Benzema was great. Great game from James. I still miss Bale because he's my favorite, but it'll be interesting to see what happens. But I thought he looked really good.
It's cool to see, though, that James, we have a system now that James can just slide in and replace Bale, right? You know, and when that time comes, which is really refreshing because people, and this is, so many people have been saying, why put James on the right? Why put James on the right? He's so good there. I don't know if people realize this. Like, that's where he was with Monaco. That's why he became big.
He made his name that way.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah. By the way, here's a stat for you. James Rodriguez has been involved in more goals than any other midfielder in La Liga this season. 4 goals, 6 assists.
It's pretty crazy considering, like, he's not a full 100,000,000% starter the way other players in that race are, you know?
No, and James has consistently, since his time at Madrid, been a player who's been incredibly involved in Madrid's offense. Like, whenever he's on the pitch, he's a person who the offense flows through him, and it's hard to quantify that except in these kind of numbers where it says, well, when you talk about him giving the last pass or the pass, you know, leading up to the assist or the assist or the goal, if you combine all those numbers, he is in a shockingly high percentage of Madrid's goal scoring plays.
Yep.
And that's one of the things that he really brings to the team, right? I know that a lot of people hated on him, but I think he was a brilliant buy for Madrid. I love James. I'm very happy about him, and I think that I'm glad that he's getting a chance to shine under the Zidane system. Guys, let's take some questions moving ahead. Unless you guys want to talk a little bit more about how to quantify an own goal versus a versus a goal via deflection, which was an interesting thing that popped into my head considering the own goal versus the James shot. Like, I'm not kidding. I think that the definition is about whether the shot was going on target in the first place. And if it wasn't going on target, then it's an own goal. And if it was, then you give the person a goal.
Yeah. It's like really semantics more than anything, but
yes.
One thing I wanted to say before we move on, I'll just make this real quick, is that he's not making like the crazy penalty saves and other stuff he was in the beginning of the season, but Navas has been absolutely brilliant. Just like the confidence I feel when balls come into the area, and I mean, I don't want this to regress into like a Casillas bash, but just the decision making and the confidence that he shows going in and going getting these balls and making assertive saves at the edge of his box. He's been pretty brilliant, and I feel like it's kind of been an afterthought, so I just wanted to give him a shout-out. Shout-out to you, Killer Navas. You're so amazing.
I'm happy to have a let's-all-talk-about-how-much-we-love-Killer-Navas conversation, but I don't think that people need to hear more of that. I've been very I've been very open in my love for Killer. So where are we, guys? What are we looking at here? I'm looking at we had one of the great autocorrect questions of the evening, or really of my time dealing with the podcast tonight, guys. Someone tried to ask us whether ischemia will ever reach the level of Iniesta, and I was very pleased with that. It's good to see that people's phones are auto-correcting Isco into like a blood disease. I'm sure Josh, the actual, you know, soon-to-be doctor, will have more to say on that. Would have more puns or whatever. But yeah, will Isco ever reach the level of Iniesta is a question I'd be interested in chatting about. I'm not sure that it's a fair comparison, personally. In that I feel like Iniesta is a very different player from Isco. But I mean, I guess they're both Spanish midfielders. I don't know. Do you guys feel like that's a fair thing? To me, it seems like Isco and Iniesta are both, I mean, Isco especially is more of a, you know, yeah, he's passing and making assists and he's helping out in defense, but he's more of a scoring midfielder. Whereas, at least the Iniesta that I've grown up watching, especially on the Spanish national team and also on Barcelona, is more of a pass first.
It's really it's kind of an unanswerable question until maybe you ask us this in like 7 or 8 years, and then we can.
Right.
But
I mean, what would it look like? Is the question.
I think Iniesta's
level look like? Does he score the winning goal in the World Cup? Is that what it looks like? Because probably not then.
That's the thing. The bar is so high with Iniesta because he's one of the best Spanish players that's ever lived. And to me, I think if Isco wants to be on that plane, one thing he needs to improve on is his decision-making. Because Iniesta, his football IQ is through the charts. Like, he's smart. He knows when to release the ball, where to release the ball to. I don't feel that way with Isco yet. He's loaded with talent, but there are certain decision-making things he has. Sometimes he holds the ball too long when a quick outlet pass is there to get him out of trouble. He can just do that. I mean, the talent is there. And I think there was a certain Iniesta's hype maybe when he was younger. Isco's age was probably about the same as Isco has now. So there's that. But again, it's really hard to see how it'll unfold.
Yeah, they're similar in that, you know, they're kind of shorter Spanish attacking midfielders. They play, I was like looking at their heat maps, they play in pretty similar areas of the pitch. But like you guys were saying, like Iniesta's biggest strength is his passing and his decision making. Whereas I think Isco's is his dribbling and his, you know, kind of final third pass. I guess technically they're comparable, but they don't do exactly the same thing despite playing in the same spot. But I don't think it's crazy to think that he has the capability to. I mean, I think Isco's as talented, and just in speaking of terms of like what that dude can do with the football, is as talented.
But I think that Isco is already a better shot than Iniesta for my money, especially off of that quick transition to his right foot, whipping it into the far corner. I don't see Iniesta making that shot very much.
Yeah.
I think that Iniesta is still clearly a better short space passer. The guy who can see the field, you know, just as well as Xavi could. And Xavi are probably the best players ever at seeing the ball like that. Especially in like these kind of tight spaces. Right.
Isco loves that, like, just outside the box, like,
right
in the corner, those, like, curling shots that usually go over, but he has been known to score a few of them.
But I wouldn't even say they usually go over. He doesn't get – I don't know. I don't even say that they usually go over for him. I would say that teams have learned to worry about that shot with him, so they've put a lot of – like, when he tries to set up for it, they put players on him. Like, in this game, he tried that shot 2 or 3 times, and it was almost always blocked.
It blocked, yeah. Blocked every time, yeah.
But when he gets that shot, he has that shot. So I feel good about – I mean, I feel that shot – like, he has not just that shot, but if we're talking about comparing Dean, yes, I don't even think it's really a conversation in terms of that particular out-of-the-box shooting ability. It's very, I mean, like he's maybe the best current Spanish midfielder at that with that particular threat. The question is really whether, like, that's what I was saying when we're talking about comparisons here, right? Like, what's the comparison? Like, is Isco trying to be Iniesta in that he's going to be this type of facilitator who, you know, is going to give that through the three different players' legs and no space pass?
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't – that's not really the way I see Isco. I think of him as a high-energy hustle-type player who's got the vision but, you know, yeah, has also got the shooting ability to maybe take a shot on when Iniesta might find that perfect pass to a Suarez or whoever.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Iniesta, kind of compared to Isco, he plays almost in slow motion, where Isco was very, like, energetic type player. But it's right. Also mm-hmm. so difficult to do these comparisons because no two players are really alike. So we just go by our best reference point, really.
Right, and with Iniesta, it's interesting because he actually really is very similar to Xavi, right? These are two players who came up together and who learned from each other. But, you know, I think that the best comp to Iniesta is Xavi, right? And he's like this player who kind of controls the pace in midfield and, you know, who's you know, particularly good at these kind of short range passing and finding these spaces that other people can't find as well. And maybe that's a fact of coming up in the system together, but
Right. I find it interesting that, you know, once upon a time Zidane said that Isco could be potentially as good as he was. I don't think we're anywhere near talking about that comparison, but it's kind of cool to me because I feel that Zidane is almost trying to recreate his position, the way he played for Real Madrid with Isco.
Yeah.
And you can kind of see that Isco drifts left a lot and covers for Marcelo a lot, the same way he would link up with Roberto Carlos almost.
Yeah.
So it's really cool to see that progression. I feel like there is definitely some kind of influence there where Zidane is, you know, giving a lot of pointers like, and you can, if you look out for this in the future games, just look at that like Isco-Marcelo relationship and just see if you can find any parallels with Zidane and Roberto Carlos. It's really cool to see.
I like that comparison a lot, but can we just talk for a second about Varane doing the ruleta?
Oh, that was amazing.
That made me make a weird noise. Like, I would feel
it. It was beautiful. It was like, I want someone to do a video where they put that shit side by side with like the great Zidane roulette. That's like, it was just beautiful. Woof. Let's take another question here, guys. All right, so here's an interesting one. I mean, this being said, we know that the transfer window closes tomorrow at midnight, I believe. So hopefully Madrid, if they're dealing with anything, are trying to get their fax machine fixed. So Kern Elliott asks us, at Kern Elliott on Twitter asks us, how Madrid are playing, do you think anything can be added to the midfield in the transfer window to improve the team? And I think, right, the answer is pretty certainly no, in that the transfer window as it stands right now, like there's not much Madrid was going to do generally, especially not in the midfield.
Right.
To the midfield now.
Maybe a move to get a depth at left back, which is what most people, if you were going to ask us, would say this team really desperately needs, because it's not like Marcelo's a paragon of health. But no, not in the midfield, certainly.
Yeah, it's a pretty easy one to answer, actually. I mean, I think we all say a resounding no, right?
Yeah.
Didn't this question come up in one of the previous podcasts and we were just like, no, next?
I don't know, man. I'm not sure that it's no if, like, the question is, can Madrid do anything to improve the squad in this transfer window, like trying to grab a competent left-back replacement?
Sure.
Would be.
Yeah, and didn't Zidane today talk a little bit about Shereshev and how he might be on his way out? He, like, talked about him needing to get minutes, but, like, the difficulty in it here or something like that. That would probably, if I had to bet, that like him going on loan or something somewhere would probably be the only thing I would expect out of the midfield transfer tomorrow. But who knows? Maybe by the time people are listening to this, it'll be like a moot point.
I mean, I hope so. we have, I don't know. Do you guys see anything else that's like particularly interesting in terms of what we can answer?
I have one question here from Zachary at Meow22Mix. thoughts on upcoming games from Madrid and possible upsets?
All right, so Madrid comes up with Granada next and Athletic Bilbao after that, is my understanding of the schedule.
Correct. Yeah. And then right after that, 4 days later, we go to Rome. So the Champions League first leg is against Roma on the 17th.
Right.
And then we come back, relatively straightforward game against Malaga, and then it's the derby on the 27th. So there's like, I said Bilbao and then Roma and Atletico. So
it's,
have...
it's not, I'm sorry, it's not Roma, Malaga, Roma, Atleti? The return leg with Roma isn't between those 2 weeks. That doesn't really matter.
No.
It's not that like I can after. See, but I could be wrong on that.
The return leg for Roma is not till like March.
Okay, so...
So four out of Real Madrid's next six are on the road. Which I guess is probably a point of interest. Granada, pretty poor team, like currently in the relegation zone. Probably as good a chance as any for them to get their first away win under Zidane.
Yeah, it's hard not to see Madrid coming away with 3 points, especially because Bale is trying to get back for this game. We'll see if that happens or not. I wouldn't rush him for it. Doesn't really matter. I think it's important for Madrid to make a good showing here, though. So I would say Madrid, I mean, I'd be pretty comfortable if, you know, saying that Madrid wins this match against Granada.
Athletic are always tough. That'll be a game I'll be worried about. But who knows? It's at the Bernabeu, so maybe the Real Madrid fortress will prove its worth there.
Yeah, those games against Bilbao are much more tough when you have to go up north. It's, I mean, at the Bernabeu, sure. It's definitely not as challenging.
Right.
Yeah, they do. And Adoriz is in good form, really good form. I think obviously the biggest one is it's going to be tough in Rome. I think everyone kind of sees it as, you know, we got this draw. I think it's going to be a bit tougher than people think. And it's not so much that Roma is a good team, but historically we struggle in Italy.
Yeah, I agree, and I think it's important to remember that. Like, Madrid hasn't been great in Italy historically. Now, that being said, Roma, of all the Italian teams, they're not the one that I'm worried most about. So, yeah, they're definitely a solid team. It's nothing to be taken lightly, but no team in the Champions League is going to be taken lightly at this stage, especially.
Sure.
I feel good about Madrid's chances to advance against Roma. Especially because of how good Madrid has looked at home and knowing that Roma still has to come to Madrid after that first leg, and Madrid will know exactly what they have to do. That being said, even in Italy, you know, it's an Italian team, and they're, you know, Italian teams do have, they're a special type of beast for this Real Madrid. There's a little bit of a block with playing them. There used to be, at least. There was, I mean, obviously, we got eliminated by Juventus last year, so. But Roma are no Juve, right? So.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Roma tie will be, like, that first leg will effectively be, like, a let's just get an away goal. Even if we concede one, that's all right. Let's just get that away goal so that they can really play their game in the Bernabeu. The game that I'm concerned about is away at Malaga, who is a really, really good defensive team. And that's the game right before the derby. So if they drop points against Malaga, the pressure will be, you know, through the roof against Atleti. So, I mean, that'll be a game, you know, on the heels of the Roma game, you know, sandwiched by those two tough fixtures. So if they can go and get a result on the road at Malaga, that would be huge. So yeah, it is. This is going to be a really interesting next like month and a half. I've some really interesting fixtures. So that's a good question. And I think shout out to Zachary. He usually asks a question every week. So shout out to him for being an engaged listener. That gets me stoked.
I mean, there are a number of people. Sometimes we don't read all your questions, guys. It's because we do have limited time, and some of them are. I mean, I suppose what we could do with some of the repetitive questions, we do get a lot asked similar questions, because fair enough, like, you guys all have the same ideas, the same questions that I would ask, right, after this kind of game. Like, for example, like, what is the role for Hamas and Isco when Bale comes back? I think that's a fair question, especially mm-hmm. after Hamas having a very good showing and Isco having a very good showing tonight. Like, but at the end of the day, who do you bench is a – I think it's just a question of I mean, I don't know how to answer the who do you bench question. I've never – I always feel like this is a – people complain about the who do you bench question, but I think it's a great thing. If I was a manager, I would much rather have a who do I bench question than a who do I start question, if that makes sense. Yeah, like,
100%.
I want to start all of these players. Yeah. I don't want to – I want to know that, right? Like, that's great. So that's one of the things that people say when they talk about Madrid not, you know, getting more players. I don't know, man. I think it's good to have too many players for a team. It's not,
yeah,
you know, having a very obvious starting 11 with good depth, but people who know they're not supposed to start, mm-hmm. that it can be complicated and it's less good. I think, and that's when you have to trust your manager is the thing. If I don't trust my, if I have Benitez who's starting Lucas Vasquez or whatever, like, no, I know it's where it's going, because that's what matters. Like, if you have
you're right with
the talent that he has, then you don't have a good team. Like, you have a team where you're sitting your best players. Like, it's like everyone says that the coach doesn't, like, I believe also that at the end of the day, the coach doesn't matter that much unless he fucking doesn't start the players that he has. Right. Like, the coach can, you know, at the top end does a lot, and at the bottom end can do a lot to ruin your team. And that's what Benitez did, I thought. So
one question, Mr. Kevin at Mr. KAK27 asks, still think CR should be sold? This is something that Keon and I talked about a while last week. And I think my answer was more or less like, we'll see, which is like such a non-answer. And I'm going to stick with that. I mean, obviously it was an amazing game by Ronaldo today, but we'll see how it looks in May. That's my
answer is yes. I don't, even if Ronaldo scores a hat trick every game for let's say he scores 10 more hat tricks throughout the season, even if he wins the Champions League with us, I think you still, this is the summer to part ways with him. I think you part ways with him while he's on a high note, and because, like, it's not sustainable, and you need to incorporate James and Isco in the starting lineup, and that's pretty much all there is to it. I answered a question about this in last week's mailbag, but in no way do I underappreciate Ronaldo. He's amazing, he's a legend, but and you make a decision to build your team in a way moving forward, and you give them a big tribute and you send them off, and you do it with a clear conscience, and you have so many good young players that need to be in the mix and need to be starting. Like, I think we've talked about this so many times, but I'm terrified of losing Thomas because he's not going to have a starting role, for example. You have to choose who you're going to build your team around.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That's actually a really well thought out point.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, this is what happens when it's Keon and I. We just pat each other on the back repeatedly. One of the questions we got that I really liked, and this was something that I think we were planning on talking about anyway, was at Yusuf El Ghazi asks, through a series of questions, asking about, you know, Real's failure to close out games, excellent in the first 45, and then winding down in the second half. But today, in like around the 70th minute, right after the substitutes, actually, the team picked up and started scoring again. And he leads the question, do you think Zidane's fitness concerns have been addressed? And I'll pair this with an interesting post-game quote from Ronaldo, who says, you know, we needed to work more. The preseason was not good for us. We traveled a lot.
I wanted to talk about this, too. So guys, one of the things that I remember very vividly from different previous seasons with Real Madrid is that there are different times when the preseason, like, the players have made this type of comment at the beginning of his, or at the midpoint or so of a season. And it's almost always, so like, there are two things I want to say about it. There's, first of all, it's almost always when the season hasn't gone that well that they say that. So fair enough. They're trying to like explain, well, look, we've been in like not great shape, partially because of this tough, this tough preseason that we had. That's why we're not performing as well as we'd like to be. But also, sometimes this tough preseason can lead directly to bad results. And one of the things that I remember very vividly from the first Mourinho administration was that Mourinho abolished these kind of long trips that the team had previously done in these seasons to try to get more of a coherent preseason down, right? They was much more focused on European play, much less focused on traveling to try to get money in larger audiences. And I don't disagree with some of these players in saying that this can make a big deal, make a big difference for how the team performs, at least in the first half of the season. And I'd be interested to know what your guys' thoughts are on that.
I'm in the side that with Mourinho where, from a footballing perspective, not from a business and marketing perspective at all. Like, I'm just kind of trying to differentiate the two right now. But from a football perspective, Mourinho is absolutely 100% right. You need to prepare for eventually lifting a trophy in May, lifting a trophy or two. And it's really hard to do that if you're not focused, you're not playing against proper teams in your preseason. And you're not, traveling adds so much fatigue to it. In an ideal world, Real Madrid doesn't travel across the world to build their brand and make money and grow their global audience. But on the flip side, it's important. I think in the end, that kind of lies on Florentino Perez. And, it's interesting to me that Mourinho was able to even push for that. And Perez accepting it, but I'm with you 100%. I think this is a huge issue. You can't discount this fact.
Yeah. So I've been pulling it up. I've been going through the preseason fixtures, and they went to Melbourne, Australia, China, the Allianz Arena in Germany, different parts of China, Zhengzhou, and where else?
I'd be interested to see if there was a correlation between literally between total distance traveled, and some metric of performance at this position. Yep. So I wonder whether it would be like total distance versus, for example, points at the first half of the season or whatever, versus other years where there's not the total distance or whatever. Like it's interesting, right? Like, oh, well, we flew 1,500 miles fewer or whatever this preseason. And we had 6 more points at that point. And obviously I think that'd be a bit ridiculous obviously it's a bit ridiculous, but I'd be interested to see those numbers.
They're doing all this logging all these miles over the course of like what's effectively 2 weeks, like very end of July to mid August. And I don't think it's like crazy to think that. I wish I had like the data in front of me to support this claim, but I would venture to guess that it's like not a good thing to fly and change a million time zones over the course of a short amount of time right before the season kicks off. I feel like this is something that kind of comes up during the World Cup and the Euro years too, especially in 2014, like there was a lot of talk about how much distance, these teams had to travel across Brazil, all these miles back and forth and back and forth. It's interesting. And wasn't this something, I don't know if you guys remember, or maybe I'm just misremembering, isn't this something that Zidane kind of alluded to when he took over, like his lack of satisfaction with player fitness?
I remember that, and I think he was particularly noticing it with Cristiano. I'm not saying it was just Cristiano, but he was one of the people he kind of pointed to and saying like, I didn't really feel like his fitness was up to snuff, and I kind of buy that. not him particularly, but I meant the entire team. And it's interesting because everyone thinks of Benitez as this kind of really intense driving coach who exerts his players a lot and him requires a lot of sacrifice. And it wouldn't shock me that the team actually, you know, didn't have as much, like, didn't have quite the fitness level that maybe they needed to have, or that Benitez was running them into the ground or something. I'm very quick and happy to blame Benitez for anything.
Yeah. Which is, like, encouraging that, you know, they were, like, I think...
A lot of the players, the fact that all the players are kind of, saying the same stuff, too.
Yeah. I was going to say that the players themselves are saying that it's an issue, and that their fitness is an issue because of this. That's pretty much the end of it. Like, they're the ones who would know, right? And if it's a very real thing. And I think managers and the board needs to take note of that. Yeah. Last season, they had to travel twice, right? Because they also had the Club World Championship.
That's a good point.
We know last season how many injuries there were at key moments. So I'm sure there's a correlation there.
I don't know about you guys, like, not to end the podcast on this sartorial note 2 weeks in a row. I did not like the look of that Club World Cup crest on the center of the jersey. I think it looked just kind of out of place.
Putting that on the gray jersey.
Oh, gosh. People would explode.
The gray jersey is such a big oh my god,
it's terrible.
I was very impressed that they were even willing to wear it against Betis, considering how good the third jersey is. I can't imagine that, like, the fact that that Madrid would go out wearing that shit gray jersey. And the third jersey this season is so good too. Oh man, it's like just axe the gray jersey and bring out the third jersey every single time. Like, brutal.
Yeah, we needed you here last week. We had a lengthy discussion about how terrible that gray jersey was, especially contrasted to the Betis kits. But
yeah,
and the green, see it
green on the neon highlighter barf on that jersey.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's a good note as any to end the podcast.
Yeah, this was a good one.
All right, we'll have a podcast next week. Although next week, I just want to say next week is Super Bowl Sunday, so maybe we should do it on Saturday.
Yeah,
whatever works.
All right, we'll just figure it out. All right, guys, keep talking.
All right, guys.
Alamadi.
He stole.